The Hail Varsity Radio Saturday Morning Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Strap yourselves in. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt.
Y'all don't even know he was a virgin until he's 28, and now, roll tide.
And Mark Kranak.
Time has come for someone to put his foot down, and that foot is me.
Hail Varsity Radio on a Saturday morning. It is nice to have you alongside. My name is Mark Kranak, alongside Colton Stone, as Chris Schmidt is on the DL. No, it's the IL now. They've changed it. It used to be the disabled list in Major League Baseball. It's now going to be the injured list. Because, Colton, there's a difference between a disability and an injury, and they're acknowledging that. And they're changing it. It's going to be weird to say IL. So Chris is on the IL, and he'll be back soon. You're a baseball guy, Colton. Are you okay with that? The DL versus IL thing. I mean, I'm indifferent.
I mean, I get where they're coming from as far as the distinction goes. They're basically trying to say they're trying to get you not to manipulate the roster to where you can say, oh, he's on the DL, just so you can get other pitchers in or get get guys called up without having to call guys up from the minors, essentially. So I'm okay with it, but yeah, it's just it'll be weird changing the initial ill of it.
They're ill. I mean, it's an acronym that works.
They're keeping the DL still, but it's like if you're on the DL, you're probably done for the season.
Oh, basically. Okay, that's breaking news. I need to read up on that a little bit more.
Yeah, it was confusing, and then they're trying to make it back to a 15-day instead of a 10-day, and yeah,
there's all kinds of stuff.
They're trying to change the smallest rules rather than just make the game faster, but
which would be nice.
Yeah,
they could stand to do that. We're gonna lift your spirits this morning on Hail Varsity Radio by deeply examining the Nebraska basketball team's mentality. I'm just gonna lift your spirits. It's Saturday morning. You're awake. You know, you got the weekend ahead of you, got a bunch of crap to do, I'm sure. Had a long week at work, maybe work on the weekends. We're going to lift your spirits and just talk about the beauty that is Nebraska ball right now. And also get into Nebraska football, of course, because, I mean, that's kind of why we exist here on the show. If we don't talk about them, it's sort of, we're kind of derelict at that point. So we're not going to do that. Signing day just happened. Nebraska adds one dude total, Damarian Houston out of Oklahoma. But when you step back and look at the 14 months that Scott Frost has been on campus, It is remarkable what he has done with the roster. And so we'll get into that. But let's start, as promised, with Nebraska ball. All right, let's start right here. If you've followed this team for any length of time, did you really think, like really think, that this was the year? Did you really buy that? Right? They win 22 last year. They're bringing everybody back except for Evan Taylor. But did you really think, like, oh, there were people talking preseason. I never bought it. I'm just gonna. Maybe I'm sounding like front runner. You know, sounding like a. I don't know. I told you, because I wasn't that emphatic about it. But never bought it, ever. Everybody was talking coming into this year, Colton. They're gonna make the tournament and they're gonna win a game in the tournament.
Yeah.
It's like you don't even know who they would play. Okay, so first of all, that is stupid. The whole they're gonna win a game in the. If they're playing Duke, they ain't winning a game in the tournament. All right, the matchup matters. So that part was stupid from day one. But the fact that it was a given, oh yeah, they're going to the dance. Going to the dance. They got all this talent. No.
I think why so many people were ready to buy in right away was the fact that the Big Ten almost knew going in they were going to get probably 8 teams in, and they might be the conference that gets 10. But I don't know how much. I mean, a lot of people were just dead set on it. It didn't matter if they won 15 games or 20 games, they were going to the dance. But I think a lot of it was just so much hope based on what happened last year. But Chris and I have talked about this. There's no – when they have expectations, they don't live up to them. And when no one knows that they're good, they win 22 games. And then
– and go to the CBI or the NIT. Whatever.
Right. But we've seen this song and dance before, oh, quite literally 2-3 years ago.
Oh, come on.
And I think everyone bought into it again.
Yeah.
And we sit here talking about them being 13-10 after being, what, 10-2?
Yeah, jeez. Look, that Maryland game, not a lot of people attended. It was the worst attendance that they've had all year.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the exact numbers, but Pinnacle Bank
something.
Arena. Yeah, it looks like a, you know, a Tuesday night, you know, Benson versus Papillion South game or something. It's just like, what, you know, it's just no buzz, no anything. So the attendance dipped a little bit. And look, the season isn't over.
Right.
Technically. But that's a team playing like it's over. That is a team the thing that stood out to me the most, Glenn Watson isn't the only guy that's struggling, but it was late in the second half. He got to the free throw line. You know, and his body language was just terrible for almost the whole game.
Mm-hmm.
Body language of a guy that is shooting like 20% from the field, which is true. Like the guy that's a point guard on a team that's lost now, what, 6 in a row, 5 in a row, 10, 1,000. It feels like a million.
Yeah.
Right? It looks like a defeated man. Gets to the free throw line. Glenn's a pretty good free throw shooter. He's pretty good. I want to look up his numbers. I want to say he was at like, was he at 90 or something like that? I just like something ridiculous. I don't want to misquote that. I have to look this up here real quick. Basketball stats, 2018, 2019. We'll get to it in a bit. But he gets to the free throw line and just bricks it, right? Like, not, you miss free throws. That right. happens. But normally they just kind of circle the rim, pop out, you know, glance. Off. This thing could have just, like, sat on the back part of the, like, the bracket of the rim. I mean, it was, I mean, it's what you see at pickup games. Or, I mean, very rarely do you see a guard, a decent free throw shooter, get to the line and miss that badly. And this is after he's been throwing up brick after brick. This is not to say Glenn Watson is the problem. He is a symptom of the larger problem,
mm-hmm.
which is this team is completely, completely without spirit, without belief, without confidence. The issues are so rampant that it just felt like, and then even listening to Tim Miles, that they all believe it's over.
Mm-hmm. With eight games to go.
How the hell do you climb in the Big Ten, which is the best conference in America right now?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this I probably longer than this week, but this week especially with the whole, you know, development. Are these players developed? Are they just there to move on to the next level? Kind of what that mentality is. And you're seeing a guy, and again, it's easy when you go 0-10 and you can just keep piling on him, but with Glenn Watson, he has not gotten better each year. He like peaked his sophomore year and then it slowly regressed, mm-hmm. and at the signs of adversity he really wasn't there. And then you have guys that have only been there for a year and a half because they transferred in, and so they're kind of just trying to bounce from Nebraska and move on from there. And then by that time, you don't really have any depth because you've been playing with guys that are transfers, and then either the guys that aren't playing that should be your depth transfer, mm-hmm. or by the time it comes to play, they haven't seen any significant minutes. So now you're kind of stuck where you are.
Yeah.
But they also are playing, like you said, like it's over.
That's how they're playing.
Yeah, it just does not look like. at times it looks like they want to be out there, and then something bad happens, and everything bad happens.
Yeah. And then you look at collectively on the year, and I was right, by the way. Glenn Watson was a 90% free throw shooter.
Wow.
Okay, so 34 of 38 on the year. 89.5% is where he sits now. So, and this is as good of a free throw shooter as you can basically possibly be.
Yeah.
And he just completely bricks this thing. Like me out there. I mean, just no. And it was just like, what? And the reason why it stood out so much is because after watching Glenn for 4 years, I've literally never, ever seen that happen. Mm-hmm. Never seen him miss that poorly. And it just speaks to, God, it just speaks to so much. Listen to James Palmer's line right now. He's 37% from the field,
mm-hmm.
33 from three. Watson, barely 40%, 36% from three, respectable. Let's go Isaiah Roby. Now he's got the top field goal percentage on the team of somebody that actually plays at 45%. But collectively, this team is just, they can't score. They've never had an offensive identity under Miles. They didn't have an offensive identity under Sadler. They haven't had an offensive identity in the building for a long-ass time. A long time. And let's rewind, too. Remember going into, I believe it was Ohio State, there was all the talk about, hey, we practice tough.
Mm-hmm.
It's toughness time. We're going to get tough, and we're going to have a leader. And that leader, ladies and gentlemen, is Isaac Copeland. And Isaac became the leader, right? You know, I need to provide leadership. I'm the senior. We're going to do this. The other team's like, yeah, cool. He could be the leader. Because, you know, they don't seem to have that going either. So, Right. Sure. Yeah, he'll be the leader. And then he gets hurt. So after they had finally been like, yeah, he'll be our leader. We'll go with Isaac. Then he gets hurt. It's almost like at that moment, they're just like, this isn't going to work out. And they feel like stupid at this point because they've been busting their ass. It's not like they don't work hard or that they don't care.
Right.
They worked their ass off in the offseason. They heard the expectations. They came out of the gates firing earlier this year, working Creighton, putting 90-plus on those dudes, getting in an up-and-down game with them when all logic told you don't do that. But they did it, and it worked. And, I mean, things were looking up, but it is just tanking. And you got to believe at this point, let's hedge it. Let's percentage that Miles is back. Percentage that they climb out of this. I mean, that's what we're talking about here. And you wish it didn't happen?
Yeah.
Tim's an interesting guy. He's good with the fans. He's good with the media. He's doesn't embarrass you. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he's a good dude.
He fits what you want.
He's a likable guy.
As the coach goes, yeah.
Total likable guy.
It's just on the court hasn't... And that's the tough part is you look at the whole... I mean, this is year seven. You look at all 7 years, and there's been the stretches where, I mean, you're playing Michigan, Michigan State, Purdue, whoever, fill in the blank, and I mean, the Big Ten's incredible. But of those years, I mean, they haven't been, I mean, atrocious as far as
no.
Big Ten play goes. I mean, you look at his record, and that would tell you it is, and he's got basically a .500 record here, but... There are times where they look a lot better than what their record shows. Mm-hmm. It's just they're playing teams that are a lot better. But I don't know how you proceed with the next 8 games. Well, and I guess you're in the Big Ten tournament either way. But
and you know, all this might be useless if you head to West Lafayette today and. Knock them off, right? It could happen, I guess. You know, that's why they play the game. But it's just brutal to watch.
Well, and
just brutal to watch.
If they want, I mean, to really secure a spot or secure a bubble spot even.
Oh, dude, they got
to have to win five games if you include the tournament, the Big Ten tournament. They have to win five more. Well, we just watched them lose six in a row, and that was the easy stretch of the season.
Yeah, the quote-unquote easy stretch. You're right, because here's what you got. You're at Purdue. You're back home with Minnesota Wednesday. You got Northwestern at home. Then you're at Penn State. You got Purdue. And then you close out with the Michigans. Michigan and Michigan State.
And then Iowa. Iowa at home, right?
Yeah, that's right. Sorry. Iowa at home. Missed that one. Yep. So, I mean, it won't get easier.
No.
And man, in basketball, when it gets ugly, it gets ugly.
Mm-hmm.
And you're talking about the team being in a dark place and, like, it's ugh. And we have witnessed so much of that at Nebraska, not just in hoops. Saw it in football last year where it's like, I don't even think the team is consciously doing it, but it's like they're rejecting what's going on. You know, and that's what the football team was doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like they didn't like Riley. You know, they liked Riley. Riley's a nice guy, whatever. You know, John Perella, awesome. He's black shirt, and tough, all gas, no brakes, you know. Like, but at some point you see it where they just stop believing in what's happening.
Yeah.
They don't trust what's going on. They probably don't even know it themselves. It's not like they consciously say, I do not trust what Tim Miles is telling me right now. It's just deep down they don't.
Well, and I think, I don't remember who tweeted it out now. I would have to try to go find it. But basically someone said that the difference in Scott Frost calling the Michigan game rock bottom last year and Tim Miles hoping that, I think it was Maryland, that in year seven that was rock bottom. And the difference is basically that, I mean, Frost accepted that when he came in, it may have already been at rock bottom. You just didn't want to, you know, say that right away. But he just came right out and was like, yeah, this is bad. Like, this is probably as bad as it's going to get. And then it got a little worse, but it got a little more competitive. It got, you know, they lost two more. And then, but then you look at the rock bottom for basketball. Well, you could have said that 3 years ago.
Oh, geez.
Like, were they not at rock bottom then? They, like, come out of it? I don't want to say there's an accountability issue by any means, but, I mean, someone's got to be accountable for it, right?
Yeah. Interesting about that, I know. There's so much we could do. We could spend a whole show on it. We're not going to because we want to lift your spirits, and we're going to talk about football roster construction in a little bit. So, give you an idea, though. One thing that was different in that Maryland game, Isaiah Roby, someone must have got through to him. Just be like, dude, just shoot. Start shooting. He put up 22 field goal attempts.
Yeah.
That's his career high. There's no way he's come close to that. Now, the team was also minus 15 with him on the floor, so I'm not saying it was effective, but he also had 14 rebounds, so he had a double-double. But combined, Palmer and Watson, 2 of 23.
Yeah. It wasn't.
What?
Wasn't good.
Two senior guards?
And the,
2 for 23?
The minus 15, I mean, Roby played all 40 minutes, so that's, they lost by 15, minus 15, it works out. But, yeah, that's the thing, is you look at, I mean, 7 for 22, that's not great. I mean, that's kind of...
No, it's below 30%.
Yeah, it's a James Harden-esque stat line, you know, where you just shoot till you're out of it. But then you combine two more guys, and then between the three of them, they're 9 for 43 or 9 for 45 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's...
20% out of your three probably best scorers, basically.
Yeah, the three guys that... need to be scoring. Mm-hmm. Whether they're your best scorers or not, they need to be scoring.
So how does it work when you head to Purdue? I don't know. We'll see. We'll get into Nebraska football here in a little bit to get into roster construction. But up next, Matt Slauson. Dude put in 10 years. That's crazy to think about. Still remember him when he was here, and it doesn't seem like it's 10 years, but 10 years in the NFL. And he caught up, he just decided to hang it up this week. And he caught up with Chris Schmidt. And so we will have that for you on the Rewind. Next, it's Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Now back with Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery with Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranak.
Back with you, it's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. A standout Husker in 10 years in the NFL, announcing his retirement this week. Matt Slauson is back with us. Matt, congratulations on a tremendous career in the NFL. How tough a decision was it for you to step away? You have been a warrior, man.
Yeah, it's been extremely hard. You know, after the injury I sustained this year, breaking my neck back in October, caused you to kind of reevaluate things a little bit, and the organization gave me an incredible opportunity to coach the rest of the year, and it was sort of looking like that was the path that I was going to go on, and I had a really good conversation with the head coach and general manager over the last couple weeks, and they did make me an absolutely incredible coaching offer, but ultimately, after countless hours of going down each avenue of this, my wife and I decided that we just need some time to be together. And so I really appreciate the Colts organization for offering me that opportunity there. But, yeah, I'm just excited to be a dad and a husband for a while.
Well, Matt Slauson's with us here, Hail Varsity Radio, just with the Colts and retiring this week. That's it, man. You've gone from New York to Chicago to San Diego to Indy. And as a father and husband, that juggling act on top of your role with the Colts, and what a year Indy had, what a year Andrew had. I mean, your offensive line was physical and tough, and I think you had a lot to do with that when they brought you in. That's your reputation, man, as a guy around the league. You helped kind of bring that young group up that's talented, but I think you were instrumental in that. I want to go back, Matt, to the injury, and if you can, tell us what happened. And I know the aftermath was you played a full game with a fractured spine, and you could have been paralyzed. Correct?
Well, it wasn't quite a full game, but so the series of events, we're playing on Thursday night up in New England, and I've got a lot of history playing against New England from all my time at the Jets. Mm-hmm. And since I left the Jets, I've played him a handful of times. There's a particular linebacker there named Dante Hightower that me and him enjoy having battles against each other. So I've always got my head on a swivel for him. But what I failed to realize is the other linebacker, I can't even tell you his name, but that guy can bring some wood. And in the first half of that game, I was pulling around on a power play, and he just came down and hit me right in the chest, and he actually broke my sternum.
Jeez.
Right after halftime, we come out for our series, and they call the same play again. So I go pulling around, thinking like, "Okay, I'm going to get some payback on this guy." But he saw me coming the whole way, so he charged again with his head down. And you know, in that half a second time, you have a lot of things going through your head, and you say, "Okay, this is the guy that broke my chest in the first half, so now I got to protect my chest because that's hurting. I'm having trouble breathing now, so I got to drop my head to protect my chest." And as soon as we hit, I felt a little pop in my upper back, and I started getting some like shocks going down my arms and legs. And at that point, I was a little bit scared that I had done something. But I told myself, all right, if you can make it back to the huddle, then that's a really good sign. So I walked back in the huddle, and in my head, I'm going, "See, you're fine. You walked back over here. Given another play, let's see how that goes." The next play went just fine. And I said, all right, quit being a wimp. You're going to finish up the game. Nothing's wrong because, look, you walked back to the huddle and you played another play. So nothing can be wrong with your neck. And over the last quarter and a half of that game, I started getting some numbness in my feet. But I just chalked that up to adrenaline from the initial fear. And all this is a very cautionary tale for any future players out there to don't be an idiot the way I was. Because when I found out after the fact what it was, things got pretty real and pretty scary. And now I count myself very lucky every day. I believe God was watching out for me and my family there. Because just because of my own pride, you know, I didn't want to come out.
Matt Slauson with us, Hail Varsity Radio. That's something you can't turn off. That mental toughness, that physical toughness, you've got to have. But there's also a line in the sand. And how did that conversation go with teammates and family members about, all right, man, we love you. We love you being tough, but hold on a sec. I mean, yeah. How did that yeah, discussion go 24 hours after?
I mean, really, those conversations were happening for weeks and months after. I'll tell you a story. There was a couple weeks left in the season. We're in the beginning of playoffs. I had just gotten my final scans from the doctors, and they gave me the all clear. I said, look, you are now healed. So now if you wanted to continue your career, you know, we know you may not continue your career, but if you wanted to physically, you're all set to do so. They called it baseline risk. They said baseline risk means you're at no increased risk. You're at the same risk as you've always been of injuring that spot. And so I was really excited, really happy. I come running in to the facility to go see my offensive line coach, who is a really close friend of mine. And he says, look, I don't care what the scans say, you will never play here ever again. And if for some reason the organization allows you to play, I will quit, because wow, I will not sit here and watch you put yourself into a chair because you are selfish and prideful. I will not let it happen. And, you know, he's a pretty rough guy. Some of the things he says sounds really extreme and really angry and mean, but I knew the position he was coming out of was just pure love and concern. So that's kind of an example of some of the conversations I was having.
That's pretty intense. Matt Slauson is with us, standout Husker, 10-year NFL vet, and his story about his injury and retirement. Matt, I want to reflect on your career. I remember you with New York and Chicago and San Diego, and then we've highlighted Indy. What are you most proud of?
Honestly, I'm proud of it all. Every organization I've been to, really every single year, is like a different chapter in a book. And I'm sure I'm not the first guy that has referenced that. You know, coming out of Nebraska, getting drafted late, coming into a line that was riddled with first rounders and future Hall of Famers, I believed in my heart that the best I was shooting for my rookie year was hopefully making practice squad, maybe getting a year on practice squad, and then coming home and finding something else to do, because I was not good enough to make it. I didn't believe I was good enough to make it. But apparently the organization saw something different, and I made the active roster my rookie year, and that was a complete whirlwind. And getting to back up a personal hero of mine in Alan Faneca, who needs to be in the Hall of Fame now, and he's gotten snubbed 2 years in a row, and I think it's a bunch of crap. But the guy is absolutely incredible. And after my rookie year, the organization comes to me and says, look, we're going to release Alan, and we want you to replace him. And I remember looking right at Rex Ryan's face and said, are you sure about this? And he goes, yeah, I believe you can do it. And since then, I took over the starting role, and I started for the next nine years.
116 career games, 113 starts. Matt Slauson, his retirement. He's with us here, Hail Varsity Radio. Is there a friendship or relationship that lasts? And as far as the Nebraska side, how did Nebraska get you ready for the NFL? And what are your plans post-football? Are you going to stick with coaching? What charity work do you want to do? What outreach are you thinking about? Because you've done a lot of that as well.
Right now, my immediate plans are to do a whole lot of nothing. Our kids are in school here in Indy through May, so we're just going to be here, and then we have plans the beginning of June to make our final move back home to Nebraska. We have a small farm about a half an hour south of Lincoln. You know, we're gonna kind of do a little bit of farming, but really it's just going to be a lot of being together. As far as the coaching side of things, I'm sure I'm not going to be able to stay away. I'm gonna go into the university. I'm gonna talk with Scott, and we're gonna. I'm gonna find something to do there, I'm sure. And as far as relationships over the years, I mean, shoot, you're on a roster with 53 guys every year with another 8 practice squad guys. You make some incredible relationships, and man, I can't even list all the relationships because I've gotten close with so many guys. But you know, my time at the Jets, I think I was closest with Nick Mangold.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's another personal hero of mine, and he'll be up for the Hall of Fame soon. And you know, at the Bears was probably there's a whole slew of them. Everyone on the O-line, from Kyle Long, Roberto Garza, Jermont Bushrod, Charles Leno. I mean, I can't even list off everyone. Eben Britton, Taylor Boggs, Will Montgomery, and then of course Jay Cutler is an absolute favorite of mine.
how is that dynamic, man? Because you've got this persona with Cutler, but you knew him best.
Yeah, he is just an incredible guy. Incredible guy that has a terrible reputation. It actually angers me, the reputation that he has. But I believe it's because he's got an offensive lineman personality. He looks at this game like an offensive lineman does. He doesn't do well with the spotlight. He doesn't do well with being the all-American boy cookie-cutter quarterback. He likes just being a nasty, nitty-gritty guy. He likes to do his work and then go be with his family. He doesn't like putting on the show, and I think that's why a lot of people started to look at him a little bit differently. And, God, I try to sing his praise everywhere I can. And then after that, going out to San Diego, getting to reconnect with Danny Woodhead again.
Yeah.
That was absolutely incredible. In fact, I've been talking with him almost every day. And we're really excited to reconnect again. And in Nebraska, we're even talking about setting up some sort of podcast.
Oh, good.
Talking about just anything and everything. So, you know, whenever that gets going, I'm sure it's going to be a hell of a lot of fun. And then being here at the Colts, coming in here was a bit of a different capacity because I was the second oldest guy on the team. The only guy I was second to was Adam Vinatieri, who's in his 23rd, just finished his 23rd year in the NFL. You know, he started kicking in the NFL the year before I started playing football as a child.
Wow.
I started when I was 11. His first year in the NFL, I was 10. And I was I'm the second oldest guy on the team behind him. So, you know, when the head coach and general manager brought me in here, they they told me, they said, look, yes, we're bringing you in here because we believe in your abilities on the field and all that, but we're really bringing you in here to show these guys kind of the old school way of doing things. And I think that definitely played a part into me breaking my neck and continuing to do some of the stupid things I was doing, just because I wanted to show these guys it's okay to play hurt. Well, part of the issue was I wasn't just hurt. I was injured. Yeah. And there's a big difference between hurt and injured. And at that time, I didn't want to see it.
Matt Slauson, spending time with us here at Hail Varsity Radio. Matt, looking forward to having you back in Nebraska. Congrats on your success. And thanks for being so honest with us about this past year, man. It was very real to hear what you went through, and I'm excited for you and your family in the next chapter you guys have.
Yeah, I am too. I really appreciate the time, Chris.
Early to rise with Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Here's Chris Schmidt and Mark Kranak.
Hail Varsity Radio on a Saturday. Welcome back. Mark Kranak alongside Colton Stone. We wish Chris Schmidt well. He is on the mend right now, getting healthy. Thanks to Matt Slauson for joining us on the Rewind. 10-year NFL career, stepping aside. When he mentioned, yeah, when I broke my neck, kind of made me rethink a few things. Like, yeah, that'll probably do it. I mean, of all the things to break, once you start getting into the back and neck territory,
yeah,
you're sort of like, eh.
Well, and I don't know if it was on the same play. I yesterday when I listened to it the first time, it was I heard most of it, but he also, I think in the same game, broke his sternum.
Yeah, sure. That's fantastic.
Yeah. So he gets just cracked in the chest, and then it's like, yeah, whatever. I go back out there for the second half. And then I think the best part is when he says, you know, like, oh, I went back in the practice facility. I was, you know, baseline risk. And the coach is like, there's no way in hell I'm putting you back out on the field. And she's like, if you play, I quit.
Jeez.
And I was like, well,
man, by the way, this speaks to just how violent and crazy the game is in the NFL. Matt Slauson is a beast.
Yeah, he's a big dude.
Like, if I wanted to break his neck or crack his sternum, I have 0% chance of doing that. And this dude is wearing pads.
Yeah.
And that happens to him. I mean, hello. And that guy is a monster. What is he, 6'5", 330, something like that? Just forget it. You know, you are not, like, if he wants to eat you, he will eat you. Like, there's really nothing you can do about it. He's basically a bear walking on his hind legs. Pretty crazy, but good on him, man, for getting 10 years in and stepping aside. I wonder if any of the – we counted them. All right, there's been a ton of talk ever since Scott Frost got here. I want to build these roster numbers. I want to increase the walk-on program. Remember that even got a little bit of scorn when Dave Remington was here pre-Scott Frost when he was like, we got to get the walk-on program going. And people were like, oh, God. No, we don't. We need scholarship fast guys.
Like, 5 stars.
You need that, but you also need the walk-ons.
Yeah.
Because of roster numbers, because you want to breed this competition in practice, you want to have multiple stations going, you want the 3-star, 4-star, 5-star guy from out of state to see some dude from central or western or northern Nebraska that's just going balls out, play after play after play, setting the tone, and then before you know it, you got a whole team full of guys that are just busting their ass, and you're kind of outperforming your recruiting ranks, which ended up by anywhere between 16 and 19 after this last class, which is pretty good. So Nebraska now, this is unofficial, but I'm pretty sure they have the largest roster in America. In the sport of football, period. Probably.
It's got to be close if it's not.
The sport of football. I think we can reasonably say there is no high school that has 160 dudes on varsity.
No.
They wouldn't even have the room to do it. Maybe somewhere in Texas. I don't know. That's besides the point. But they're not even in the country anymore. They're their own country, right? That's what they want. 160 players. Frost has been on campus for 14 months, just a little over a year. In that time, he's brought in 101. For frame of reference, if you're not familiar, you should be. You get 85 scholarships. That's what you can give out. Mm-hmm. Most teams carry anywhere from 100 to 110 players. Some not even that high.
You know? Right, yeah.
Depends on how big your walk-on program is. This dude walks in and in 14 months has brought in 100 players?
Mm-hmm.
This includes walk-ons, of course. 100. Now let's look at how that translates to the roster. 81 of the 106, half of your players, half, are freshmen. There's 48 of those, 48. Or redshirt freshmen, 33. Like, you talk about a youth infusion. I knew this dude was going to flip the roster. Well, not flip the roster. You knew he was going to change things and add some pieces, but there cannot be another example of this ever anywhere, period. No way. 100 players in 2 years?
Yeah, that's the thing is that...
No way.
It obviously does have a lot to do with the walk-on program. That's where the biggest, additions are, probably, because you're also assuming the guys that have left the walk-on program and the guys that have been added and so on and so forth. But, yeah, 101 in 14 months, and then also keeping the other 60. I mean, that basically means that after the seniors and the seniors leave, which is what, another 25 kids? That's the next class. So then after two full recruiting cycles, because last year was kind of catch up the whole time. But I mean, they will have the 160 they have on the roster will almost be all new faces, or will all be faces that Frost brought in.
Basically.
Yeah. Within a year or two.
Yeah. It is remarkable what he has done. Will it work? Who knows? That's not what we're saying. Like, we're not saying all's well and, book your tickets to Indy yet.
But it's shocking. I mean, it's a big number.
You're going to lose some guys to attrition. That happens.
Yeah.
But you do not bring in 100 guys in 14 months. It just flat. There's no precedent for that anywhere ever. I'm very confident in saying that. Brandon Vogel and Gary Sharp will join us next. It's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
The Hail Varsity Radio Saturday Morning Show, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Strap yourselves in. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt.
Y'all don't even know he was a virgin until he's 28, and now, roll tide.
And Mark Kranak.
Time has come for someone to put his foot down. And that foot is me.
Hail Varsity Radio on a Saturday, hour two. Mark Kranak alongside Colton Stone, Chris Schmidt on the mend. Hope the guy gets better. Said he was coughing up a lung. I hope not literally. That would be disgusting. The lung just goes flopping out right in front of you. Like, put that back in. Pretty ridiculous. But we hope he does better, and he will. That's what he does. The guy's battled stones. He has stones. So he'll be fine. And we're going to welcome in Brandon Vogel, managing editor for Hail Varsity. Hey, Brandon. Hi. How you doing?
Pretty good. You?
Kind of depressed, man. We're on the tail end of the most depressing era in Nebraska athletics. Is that it? Are we witnessing the end of maybe one? There's no hope right now in the Nebraska basketball program, or is there? Do you have hope? Any modicum of hope? Can you lift our spirits in any way? Will this thing turn around?
No, I can't lift your spirits. Like, it's kind of, I think the most recent loss to Maryland, you kind of saw 10 Miles' reaction to it, and I think even he was a little bit shocked by how that one went. And you're looking at playing Purdue, who's obviously going the other direction at the moment. Like, I mean, if they were to get one of these wins here in the next one or two, at least then you could put that part behind you. You're like, okay, well, there's seven left now. Let's just go out and try and win all seven, which obviously you try and win every game, but this team really needs some sort of moment that they can kind of believe in for the home stretch here, and it just hasn't happened yet. So it's tough. Some of the questions with the Copeland injury we've seen, you know, and we kind of felt this way going in, but they just don't have answers for with the team as it's currently constructed, and what do you do in that scenario? So sorry, no lifelines from me.
Yeah, that was more depressing. Thanks, man, for nothing. Now, last game, Glenn Watson, not the only guy struggling, but his struggles are very apparent. Do you remember that bricked free throw last game against Maryland? And what did that say to you?
Well, I mean, you know, we've seen Glenn have some good games, and we've seen him have some rough games. Free throw shooting has kind of been, however, pretty static for him. So when that happened, you kind of knew that, oh, maybe there's, like, I mean, it's hard to even understand, like, everything this team's sort of dealing with and going through and trying to overcome at this point. And I think that free throw was kind of a good reference point for, like, oh, wow, like, what's happening here? And, like, you know, why can't they kind of get past it? Like, and it's hard to know, you know, it's easy to say, like, well, you just gotta play through those sorts of things. But who knows what sort of weights are kind of pulling on this team at this moment. That's what that free throw said to me.
Brandon Vogel with us on Hill Varsity Radio. Brandon, it's not new that they've had a struggling offense, and Mark and I were talking about that. It's not new for this year. It's not new for this Miles era. It's just not new for Husker basketball in general. But is this a scheme thing? Is this confidence? Is this just a lack of movement in the offense? I mean, what is going on that no one can become that pure shooter you need to, and there's no one really that's there to take over the game like you thought there would be?
Yeah, there's not. I mean, I think in my estimation, Nebraska's offense, you know, when it breaks down, kind of looks for that guy who can kind of save a possession. And it's intermittently had that. That's kind of been a continuing problem for Nebraska basketball. So I think you have to look at a little bit of, you know, is it better for them to have a more defined sort of offensive scheme? Is it better for them to run some more sets? And that's just not been sort of how they approach that side of it. You know, it's kind of like telling an option football coach to, you should run the spread because everybody's running the spread a little bit. Like, at some point, you know, you believe in what you believe in offensively, and, well, if it doesn't produce results, you know, that belief might be all that you have left at the end of it. But it's tough to figure, you know. I retweeted this, but from Ben Van Catt, who does some great design work on the magazine, though people know it, but just also a huge Nebraska basketball fan, who actually looked at scoring droughts. So you can find that on my Twitter feed if you want. And they're kind of, you know, they happen to everyone. My read on the data that he put together was, for whatever reason, they just seem a little bit more demoralizing for Nebraska. They have a tougher time sort of steering out of those droughts that happen to everyone. And when you look at it from that perspective, I think you're looking at more of a kind of mental part of it than just the actual X's and O's of how they run their offense.
Brandon Vogel with us on Hail Varsity Radio. Nebraska Purdue tonight, 7:30, or you can watch, I don't know, Platoon or Apocalypse Now to make yourself feel better. I don't know.
Football's back today, right?
Well,
AAF, yeah.
The AAFL, is that what it's called?
Yeah, AAF, yeah.
Mike Riley and crew. I'll watch. I'm going to check it out. Might as well. It's football. Let's switch over to football, though, Brandon. And you did some, you know, Nebraska wraps up its class. They add Damarian Houston, the wide receiver out of Oklahoma. They bring in four pretty fleet guys at receiver. They all kind of have that profile that you think, like when you think of Oregon in their heyday, it seems like they had a lot of those kind of dudes, right? Like the 6 foot 180, 10-600 guys. That Nebraska just added four of those guys.
Yeah, they did, and I think that is kind of the model here. The nice thing about those guys, because they're not 6'3 and running 10-6, is that they tend to be kind of in that 4-star high 3-star range, and for wide receivers, that's kind of open waters. I mean, there's a lot of wide receivers out there. A lot of them get ranked. So I think that's one of the more forgiving positions out there. If you can look at a guy and find somebody who you really like and thinks really fits you, you probably have a better shot at that guy than just pick the DNs you pick off the top of the pile, because those players are kind of in short supply. So I think offensively, Nebraska got a pretty good complement of skill players. I think as things continue to go forward, they'll have no shortage of interest from skill players. You know, the thing that might come up for Nebraska in recruiting as the offense continues to progress is, they might have to battle against the guy who wants to come in and be the guy, because I just don't know if they're ever going to have that really in the wide receiver running back rooms when they get those levels to what they want.
Brandon Vogel with us on Hill Varsity Radio. And Brandon, they got most of the recruiting done out of the way, so it was expected that it was going to be a quiet day unless guys just started jumping out of nowhere that they could get. But looking at the class as a whole, besides the big names, the Wandale, the Luke McCaffrey, who stands out as, like, this may be a guy that Nebraska needs, whether it's as a freshman or not, that they need as they start to, change their overall process?
Yeah, I'm really interested in the defensive side of the ball and the guys they got there, specifically in the secondary. Miles Farmer is a guy that I really like in this class from the Atlanta area. I just think he's super athletic, played a high level of football. Also a guy who on his highlight film clearly is not afraid to hit somebody. And I think you can put Quentin Newsome in sort of that similar category, also from Georgia. You know, those two guys kind of have the mindset that Travis Fisher talked a lot about last year. And he's had to, he had to develop a little bit in the sort of guy, or the guys that he inherited. Well, these two guys, he got to go out and choose. And I think you're starting to see a little bit of a switch there. So those would be two I highlight right off the top. You know, Jackson Hanna, I think, is pretty well known at this point, but I think he's going to be a really good player too. So when I look at Nebraska's big picture recruiting-wise going forward, I kind of look at offense. They'll be able to pick who they want, really. That might be defined by the level of talent they're able to recruit on defense. And while this one, they don't have a ton of 4 and 5 stars on that side, I think they did pretty well in this 2019 class on that front.
Brandon Vogel with us on Hail Varsity Radio. Counted up the roster as of today, 160 players. This is on Huskers.com. 81 of those guys are redshirt freshmen or freshmen. And then the sort of unofficial count is, since Frost walked on campus 14 months ago, he's added 100 players, 101? This has to be without precedent anywhere at any school ever, right? Like, I cannot imagine that has ever happened before, that you've had that quick of a changeover with that many new faces coming into a program in that short a period of time.
Yeah, it would be pretty tough to top. If I'm remembering correctly, I think when Alvarez got to Wisconsin, he had a pretty big time turnover, unlike this one where Scott Frost, with his history of the program and also the program's recent history without him, is given sort of carte blanche to do these things. At Wisconsin, even a program that hadn't had a ton of success pre-Alvarez, I think there was some chafing against that. But here, it's just straight celebrated. It's kind of do what you need to do. And, to get to 100, you have to factor in, obviously, the walk-ons in addition to them. And, walk-ons that are freshmen and incoming freshmen, people in Nebraska know who they are, but a lot of people don't. So like half those names, maybe not names that people immediately recognize, but they've all had the benefit of coming in and just knowing the Frost regime. So the day those guys showed up and the day they will show up, they'll only know this is how we do things here, not sort of the holdover. So I would argue, you know, even those guys bring quite a bit of value because, like you said, you're at 100 now out of 160 that have only known the Frost way. That's probably the biggest benefit aside from the players themselves.
Brandon, speaking of how many new faces there are, I know you talked about in your hot reads returning production as far as offense goes. And, you know, you look at where the offensive production was coming from last year. It was a lot of, I mean, of course, you know, you had Ozigbo, you had Stanley Morgan, you know, fill in some of the guys you knew. But, I mean, you had Adrian Martinez and Maurice Washington, and now you're going to have even more of those positions where you're getting freshmen, redshirt freshmen that are playing that haven't played. Is there a big concern on returning production, or because you've seen freshmen already in the first year, while it's only, I mean, it's a small sample size, but are you too worried that you don't have a lot of returning production?
I wouldn't say it's a big concern, but I think it's something that's definitely worth noting. So you've got, basically, you've got all your quarterback production returning. That's good. You know, the kind of key with this, you know, and this is largely the work of Bill Connolly, who comes up with these returning production rankings, is continuity in your passing game. So I think if you were to, ideally for Nebraska, you can't keep Stanley around forever. That's just not possible. But I think you'd like to see them have had a couple more guys last year involved in the receiving game, in terms of catches, yards. You know, it was really heavy on JD and Stanley, of course. So that part, I think, is definitely worth thinking about, at least, as Nebraska continues to draw some offseason buzz. I think it's less of a deal in the running game. Just kind of, that's historically, that's been the correlation. They're going to be young there. You know, I have questions about kind of who's the guy in the room, who's the leader of that room. But I think they'll be okay. Like, that part will come together. Passing game, you know, you got JD, and then you're going to need some of those guys who played a little bit to really step up and be a lot better in 2019.
Brandon Vogel with us on Hail Varsity Radio. Mike Williams seems like an obvious candidate to increase his production level. Do you think maybe part of it last year wasn't that Mike Williams wasn't capable, or that, you know, he wasn't doing something right, as much as it was Nebraska didn't throw it a ton, and Martinez favored a couple guys that had 80-plus catches and were fully accustomed to Division I football and are among the best receivers Nebraska's ever had? Do you think maybe that's part of it?
Yeah, I think that definitely could. You know, as a young quarterback where you're trying to process the game at that level for the first time, and there's, you know, there was really nobody else. You were the guy, no matter how well or how poorly you played. And of course, Adrian Martinez played well, but it's still a lot. So I think it's easier to kind of find those guys that you can rely on. As you mentioned, if they happen to be two of the most prolific receivers in Nebraska history already, even better. But I think kind of the splits for Jack Stoll lend a little bit to that. You know, he really started to come on in the second half, and I think that was, you know, largely a matter of Adrian Martinez kind of trusting what he was seeing and what he was processing to look for the tight end, to get down to wherever he may have been in individual progressions. So I think there is a good case for that. Mike Williams, you know, was pretty strong on the blocking front all year long, in my opinion. And if you can do that, like, the ball will find you eventually, because that's kind of the dirty work of being a wide receiver.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm just thinking back to Williams also. When he was thrown to, he caught it. He was open. He was pretty good after the catch, right? I mean, is there a thing that you can point to where it's like, oh, he's terrible at that, and, you know, there's kind of no hope for this guy?
No, I don't think so. You know, it was kind of just it's not like when I think back on the 2018 season, I can think of a bunch of drops. Like the first thing I really think of him was like, oh, hey, it's Mike Williams on a downfield block again. Like, that's the part that sticks with me. But like you said, I think he did pretty well with the chances he got. He just didn't have a ton. I'll have to go back and look at what his targets actually were for the season. But yeah, I think he's perfectly accomplished player. I think there's reason to kind of count him in the receiver discussion, you know, which is largely going to be centered on replacing Stanley. Like, Mike Williams can help to do that. And, you know, and I did find it interesting that Frost mentioned Javon McQuitty by name on Wednesday at the press conference too. There's another name where it wasn't clicking for him last year for whatever reason, but to hear him mentioned on Wednesday certainly caught my eye at least.
Brandon Vogel with us on Hail Varsity Radio. Brandon, just a thought on Stanley Morgan being the only Husker invited to the NFL Combine. Is there any surprise with that? Did you think maybe Devine would have gotten an invite? I mean, not that he still can't, but it'd be kind of one of those wild card out of the blue. I mean, is that shocking at all, or is that kind of what you expected?
I thought Devine would probably get there. You know, he closed so strongly, which I guess, considering how little he played in the opening three or four games, like his entire season almost felt like a close. And then he ended up going for 1,000 yards and showed he could be a threat out of the backfield, all that good stuff. But, you know, Nebraska's sort of been in this position with the combine and the draft in general in recent years where it's borderline, you know, and they're not sending multiple guys to the combine. And that probably needs to change, you know, to some degree. These are separate things, but it's a good indication of talent level to some degree. So I think going forward, Nebraska needs to be a school where 3-4 guys at least are in that combine discussion each year. And that hasn't been the case of late. You know, I don't know if they'll ever be sort of Alabama, Ohio State, where it's 8 to 10 guys every year, but they need to be better than what they've been.
Hey, you just mentioned, by the way, that Frost brought up Javon McQuitty. He's got all the measurables. He could be sort of that big receiver. He also brought up Wyatt Lever. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that name right. Walk-on redshirt freshman out of O'Neal. Did that strike you, too, that he brought up a redshirt freshman walk-on receiver?
Yeah, after I went and reacquainted myself with his story and where he came from. I mean, it kind of goes back to you bring in 100 new guys and like you don't hear about those walk-on guys. So anytime their name does come up, it's kind of like, oh, what's going on here? But I mean, that's the benefit of being able to bring in that number of guys is, you know, you're not going to be talking about all those guys all the time. But when one name does pop up, you're like, okay, well, this is something that is something worth paying attention to. So I think wide receiver wise, Nebraska will be okay. They'll find the guys that they need, and they've got a lot of options. They're just not all scholarship options, which is kind of the part we pay the most attention to.
Brandon Vogel, managing editor for Hail Varsity. Looking forward to 7:30 tonight, Brandon. It's going to be exciting. You're going to be glued? You're going to be watching it?
Well, I mean, after I gave this impassioned plea about how Nebraska's going to pull off the upset and go on a run here earlier, I feel like, yeah, I kind of got to tune in.
That's going to be exciting. Yeah. Okay. Brandon, thanks for joining us, man. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Oh, man. It's just, like, you know, you have to be in the mood to watch certain shows or certain movies. You know what I mean? Like horror movies. I've never liked horror movies because I'm like, I'm not into murder. I'm just not into people getting murdered and hacked. I'm just kind of not in the mood for that. I'm chilling at home. I just want to relax. Like, I don't want to see heads getting chopped off. It's, you got to be in the mood for certain things. Like, that's the choice you have to make when you're talking about Nebraska ball right now.
Well, yeah, it's kind of like you know, you're sitting on the couch and you're like, do I watch another episode of the show I'm binge watching because I'm still here or because I'm actually going to pay attention, right? Uh-huh. So I think with Nebraska basketball right now, it's am I watching because I'm still hopeful or am I watching it because it's just on the TV?
Well, and are you setting yourself up to upset yourself?
Yeah.
Kind of like
you're gonna walk out of the room with 15 minutes left in the second half, and only expletives can leave your mouth.
Right. It's like if you commit to just watching Fox News and or CNN all day, you're just gonna get pissed off at the state of our government and all the idiots that are running it. You're just gonna be like, God, you know, it's just gonna make you mad. You can do other things. You can bake brownies. You can play with your children. You can do all kinds of stuff. Why would you subject yourself to that?
You can't throw chairs at your children. You can throw chairs at your television.
You can throw chairs at your children. It's just not recommended. And it's illegal. So you shouldn't do it. But you can. You can do anything you put your mind to, Colton. All right, let's check in with Gary Sharp. He's on the other side here on Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Glad to have you back.
Yes, sir. You heard me right.
Here are the guys, Schmidt and Kranak.
Well, Hector, here's the game plan. You're going to bring us two absolute martinis. You know how I like them, straight up. And then precisely 7.5 minutes after that, you're going to bring us two more. Then two more after that, every 5 minutes until one of us passes out.
Excellent strategy, sir.
Hail Varsity Radio, Saturday morning show. Mark Kranak, Colton Stone, Chris Schmidt is getting well somewhere, presumably at home, and then is going to end up puking tonight when he watches Nebraska at Purdue at 7:30. Sickened by what he's seeing. Let's welcome in Gary Sharp. Gary, this is a really depressing time of year. just wondering if Brandon couldn't do it. You've been around basketball a long time. Percentage chance that Nebraska digs deep, turns this around, salvages the season. Percent chance.
Single figures.
I'm wondering at a number.
I think, you know, it's if you're Wednesday night, you go into that game and you're thinking, okay, there's a little bit of hope here. There's 9 games. This is what the roadmap could look like. But you got to win tonight. And there was nothing in that game that said there's still hope. And you saw how emotional the head coach is and his players are after the game. And whether it's just they're in a, you know, in a rut, can't get out of it, I just don't know how they score the basketball. What they have entered into offensively is a black hole that's going to take more than a big shot hitting to get them out of. And it is downright depressing. And it's, you know, you go from the stages of being angry to sad to thinking, all right, what happened? How do you fix this? And right now Nebraska's at a stage where you have 8 games left, and it might even get worse, but you have to look at the big picture now and figure out how you grow this program and who the growers are going to be, either coaching them or playing. Because some guys that, you know, will be back here next year, this is their time to shine. And they got 8 games to go. Guys that are seniors that expect to go to the NCAA tournament, never say never. They can save their season, but it's just the offense and the inability to shoot the basketball, and it's going the wrong way, and it's been going the wrong way for a while, is just startling. I don't think I've ever seen something like this.
Gary Sharp with us on Hail Varsity Radio. And, Gary, you kind of hit the nail on the head there. It's more about, I mean, getting these young guys into play. And it's hard to hear that, you know, Miles may not be back, and you look at the recruiting class they're coming in, and you kind of want to give him maybe a chance to work with it. But then you look at the past 6 years up to now, and you've seen some of the guys that he has recruited or transferred in, and the development really hasn't been there, and it's almost like they're regressing. Is that kind of what you've noticed too?
Well, I think a big key here is Glenn Watson. And Colton, that would be the person you're talking about. You know, Glenn looks a little bit like what he looked like last year, where he got off to a good start, and then he really struggled to shoot the basketball. and it looked like he lost trust in the teammates. The difference last year compared to this year, and I see almost the same thing with Glenn, he got up to a great start this year through the month of December, and we're like, he's a different player. He's got a lot more confidence. His shot is going down. He's being a facilitator. The thing with Glenn is, last year when he would get into these slumps, Evan Taylor would be able to come off the bench and fill a role. Evan Taylor was so important to that team last year because he was able to give Glenn a breather, let Glenn sit on the bench, just take a deep breath, watch what was unfolding, and then get back out there. And Evan Taylor would come on the floor, and he's not going to put up a double, you know, every time he was on the floor, but he was good in that role to spell some minutes, but also he was really good off the floor and kind of bringing everybody together. And there's elements of what Evan Taylor did last year, what Kenya Hunter did, that Nebraska is missing. But no excuses. This is all on Nebraska. They're not playing well. They're not scoring. Their confidence is shredded. And when the head coach looks like somebody who has taken, you know, 12 rounds of punches against a heavyweight champion, and it's tough to recover. And I keep saying, you have 8 games to go, and it's not like the schedule is easy. The schedule, you still play the big boys in the Big Ten. So pride kicks in. Something has to happen. I just don't see it tonight because of the team you're playing, who right now might be the best team in the Big Ten, and also you're playing in one of the most difficult atmospheres in all of college basketball. And, oh, by the way, they haven't played this week. So they've been sitting there waiting for you for a week.
Isaiah Roby, that said, Gary, he put up 22 shots. I mean, only 7 went in, but what's been the thing with Roby? Get more aggressive. God, this guy's got NBA talent. Why doesn't he be more aggressive? Why doesn't he shoot more? He did. Now, for frame of reference, he has 188 field goal attempts on the year. So he took 1/9 of his shots came last Saturday. It was a loss, or not last Saturday, but earlier in the week. It was a loss, but is that maybe something? Like, if there's any glimmer of hope, is it maybe Roby just kind of going for broke and letting it rip like everybody's hoped he would?
I think at that point, you're right, Mark. You let him do it. And he was the spark at the beginning of the game. The problem is, if you go back to Illinois, Roby and Palmer got off to good starts. They just couldn't sustain it, and nobody could, the rest of the roster, couldn't come up to meet him. And, you know, do you go with that same philosophy? I think Isaiah is at a point now where he's looking around, and there's no Isaac Copeland. There's less punch off the bench. There's less punch on the floor. I got to do everything. And if that's the way Nebraska has to win a basketball game, I'm all for it. But he seems to get off to good starts, and then he hits a wall and waiting to hand off the baton. And there's been nobody there to take the baton. But if that's the case, I'm for it right now for Isaiah Roby just to go off like he did the first 15 minutes on Wednesday night. They just have to have James Palmer Jr. and Glenn Watson to be able to match him or get into a groove when Roby is all of a sudden team start adjusting him.
Gary, before we move on to football, I just want to get your thoughts on...
Thank you.
just want to get your thoughts on Omaha basketball. Incredible win the other night, 107-102 in overtime, and second in the Summit behind Mike Dom and the Jackrabbits. What have you seen from Omaha this season, and would you believe that they're the best team in the state of Nebraska right now?
And is Darren Hansen going to replace Tim Miles?
No. Oh. They're a fun team to watch. They've always been offensive-oriented, and they've always been one of the top-scoring teams in the country. It's been their defense that has always been an issue. But they're a team that has 5 different guys that are in double figures. They have a lot of different options. As you mentioned, they won a game on Thursday night in Sioux Falls against South Dakota, which they blew an 18-point lead, were down 6 with 3 minutes to go, and tied the game at the end of regulation and scored 20 points in 5 minutes and won in overtime by 5, where they spent the majority of the night at the free throw line. Are they the best team in Nebraska? It's pretty close. It's pretty close with their starting 5. They have probably the best opportunity to get to the NCAA tournament, but they're in a conference. It's a one-bid league, and South Dakota State is the class of the league, but you only have to beat them once up in Sioux Falls, where you're essentially playing a road game. But this upcoming Thursday, Omaha and South Dakota State play for the second time this year in Omaha. And earlier, only in just a couple weeks ago, Omaha only lost by 10 up at Brookings. But Mike Dom is a handful. He's definitely, you know, one of the top scorers of all time in college basketball. He's going to get his 30 and 15 every night. They have to figure out how to stop everybody else on the floor.
Gary Sharp with us on Hail Varsity Radio. Nebraska wraps up their recruiting class, adds Damarian Houston. They have four pretty similar look and feel type receivers that join the roster, all in the 6 foot 180, kind of 10-600 range, getting some of those fleet guys. But Gary, I think the bigger headline right now, you got 160 players on the roster. Frost has added 101 players in just 14 months. 111 of that 160, if my math is correct here, are underclassmen. 81 are freshmen. Yep. I mean, it's absolutely remarkable. Has this exceeded what you knew he would be aggressive with this roster, but has this exceeded what you thought he would do?
Oh, definitely. And I think he's not done, because you're going to go through spring football, and I think you'll have a little bit more attrition. And then the free agency wire of college football will open, and Nebraska will be able to pick up a couple. I think some of this was intentional to manage the roster better. I think some of it just, it happened. And he was given the green light to have a roster of at least 150, and now he's got this large of a roster. And he knows the competition and the ability to convince walk-ons who should be going to other schools where they're going to get a full-ride scholarship are coming to Nebraska, and it's going to make his program better. They're going to be awful young. But if with all the players that he's added, if you just go through the position groups, it's not like he is adding guys to fill spots. He has added guys that either are already in the program that are climbing up the depth chart of the position group or are expected to be at the top of the position group. The whole thing with this past recruiting class where they didn't have a good second half of the signing period, where they didn't add as many to that top 15 class that they had in December, and they didn't just fill scholarships. They just didn't fill holes to say, hey, let's get to 30. Let's give blank and blank a scholarship. Because that's happened in the past, and either those guys with the new regime have been moved out or they're sitting still in the program, but they have no hope of moving up the depth chart. But it is, when you mention those numbers out loud, Mark, you go, whoa, that is amazing. That doesn't happen very often in college football. You have turnover, but nowhere near to the extent that Nebraska will have this year when they take the field in the fall as one of the youngest teams, I believe, in college football.
You know, and Gary, along with that, and you've touched on this a little bit, and, you know, over the years, probably the last 15 years, with the downfall of the walk-on program, the conventional wisdom was, well, it's the rise of South Dakota State, it's the rise of South Dakota, it's Northwest Missouri State nearby. Those guys, people are now just going, taking those scholarship situations. And it's almost like collectively we all wrote it off as though, well, that's just how it is anymore. You're not going to be able to do the walk-ons like you could have before. Frost has totally changed that. A lot of these walk-ons, Gary, had offers from South Dakota State, from these successful programs, the North Dakotas. Is that equally impressive that he has been able to flip that, what we all kind of thought was just a bygone era and not coming back?
Exactly, and that's the Scott Frost effect, because in the past it's been some of these players would say, I deserve a full-ride scholarship. I'm not going to take a preferred walk-on spot. Well, he's been able to show interest, build a relationship, and convince players that would take a full ride to Brookings or Fargo or somewhere else that they will have the opportunity to compete for playing time in Nebraska if they come in and do the right thing. And his vision and his ability to sell and the rest of his staff has been pretty remarkable, because this is a solid walk-on class that you could look through Nebraska's walk-on class and probably pick 5 to 6 guys that before they are done with their career, they will have an opportunity to start a football game at Nebraska. And you know, you're probably going to get, before they go through a 4- and 5-year stretch in Nebraska, a walk-on class that will have a Spencer Long type in it, where you'll find a gem that turns into be a couple-year starter for you and maybe has the chance to continue his career at the next level.
Gary Sharp with us on Hail Varsity Radio. And Gary, you said that this may be one of the youngest teams in America, if not the youngest team in America as far as college football goes. But is that any sense of a cause of, for concern, or is it more of you may be seeing some of these guys getting playing time right away? And if so, is there a name? I know we've got the big names, Wandale Robinson, Ty Robinson, some of these names that may be immediate factors just based on their star power. But all right, is there a name that jumps out that you're like, hey, this guy may be a difference maker year one?
Wandale Robinson is definitely one of those guys. He's the real deal. I mean, it's okay to buy into the hype. He's been impressive since he walked in the door in Lincoln, how he's handled being in a football program, being a student athlete. I think Noah Pola Gates is another one. My number one player in this class in my Super 6 was Jackson Hanna. He comes in and he walks into a position of need at inside linebacker, but I also think he's a really good football player. And I know there was a lot of consternation over Nebraska didn't get an outside linebacker. And, you know, they wanted another wide receiver, another outside linebacker. They would love to have a center. That may be a walk-on. Josh Wegener from Iowa Western when he shows up this summer. But keep an eye on Miles Farmer. Miles Farmer may turn into a guy that in 2 or 3 years becomes Nebraska's best outside linebacker recruit. The 6'3", 185 safety that is a ferocious hitter, can play in space, can take on a tight end, can also get to the passer, that you might start to see if the JoJo Doman hybrid works, those kind of guys rolling down and playing at the second level. I'm curious to watch that. But those are a couple of guys that stand out. The thing about this being a young football team is, guys, wrap your arms around this. He's a star, and he's got 3 more years, you hope, as the starting quarterback. But it would not surprise me if Adrian Martinez is named a captain as a sophomore, which I don't think has ever happened at Nebraska. And I think he has embraced that thing. I'm the quarterback. I don't care how old I am, and I'm going to lead. And if I'm the captain, doesn't matter. I'm the quarterback. I can run the team. Doesn't matter if I'm only a sophomore. I think that will happen. Martinez will be one of the offensive captains this year.
You know, that speaks to something that Frost touches on often. Talks about culture. Talks about character. It, you know, it can seem cliche if you're cynical, but it really does seem like it. Gary, you interview a lot of these players pretty regularly.
Mm-hmm.
It really does seem like the sort of quality of personality type that walks in the door and that they get after all kind of share that same, they all have that same level of maturity. Is maybe that the best way to put it?
And I think that comes from a lot. That's a great observation, Mark. I think that comes from they spend time with these guys when they're recruiting them. Now, let's go back to the conversation about completely reflipping the roster. Is if you are trying to implement your culture, look at how many young players have started with your culture. You don't have as many older guys that are balancing the past culture and embracing this new culture. You're going to have a lot of guys that get the new culture. So they will have never known anything else. They will have only known the strength and conditioning program like it is, the culture of what is expected here, who the coaches are, how you play, so on and so forth. But I think they do a great job in recruiting and building relationships, understanding the player, and then saying, that player loves to ball. We would be a perfect fit. Let's bring him in. Because I think you hear more and more of the players that are talking to the media, and listen closely as we get to spring and through spring, they kind of sound like either their head coach, the way they talk about football or they talk about the program, or they sound like their position coach. And that's pretty impressive that that has happened in a short amount of time. But I think it's a football program that is getting football players that love the game of football. They love to talk football. Football means a lot to them. And that's exactly what you want, because that is the times over the stretch of about 10 to 15 years. You've gone through years and gone through cycles of classes where that's been missing. I think they're hitting home runs when it comes to that aspect of getting guys into the program that love the game of football.
Gary Sharp, sir, appreciate it. Thanks a lot for the time, man. We're going to talk to you again next week.
Hey, thanks, guys.
All right, Gary Sharp in his normal time slot right here on Hail Varsity Radio. Yeah, we're time-wise, we're all screwed up, right, Colton, because Schmidt's not here, not running the clock right. We got to hit a break here, or what's happening?
Well, we've got options. We could just go for another minute and call it good.
Why don't we just do that then?
Yeah. Well, hey, don't give Schmidt too much credit for running the clock. I do my best.
Yeah, well, it's true. Well, and during the week, you guys got to hit the hard brakes and all that. Yeah,
even then, it's, you know, sometimes we're bumping Schmidt's up against it. But
screws it all up. Yeah. So, on the whole, you look at it the way the roster is built right now, I think you have one major concern, position group-wise, depth-wise. Linebacker.
Yeah.
And that's it. I think that's it. You got some candidates. I think you're pretty thin at inside guys. You're pretty thin. You know who's going to be on the inside.
Yeah.
Presuming health. It's going to be Muhammad Berry. You're good there. Will Honus, if he comes back, you're good there. Maybe a Jackson Hanna, maybe a Henrich. Outside linebacker, That's kind of it, though, right?
You've got options, though.
That's kind of it.
Yeah.
Name another position group where you're like, I don't think you have that. Enjoy watching Nebraska-Purdue tonight if you enjoy gouging your eyeballs. Talk to you next week.